First Samuel 31. Actually, if you notice in the book, it sends us also to Second Samuel and the First Chronicles. The biggest point, the biggest takeaway this morning is Saul's death. Now, Israel wanted a king. They wanted a strong king. God had a choice, and that was Saul. And Samuel debated a bit, but in the end, he obeyed God. And so Saul was anointed king, and he was a strong king. But he had one failure. What was his failure? Okay, using his own judgment. Patience. That's exactly right. He grew impatient. It was a matter of disobedience, a matter of bad judgment. But really what it boiled down to was a lack of patience. How many of us lack patience? Right? So Saul's biggest flaw is something we can relate to, in that sometimes we grow impatient and rely on our own judgment and disobey God. We need to trust Him. We need to trust God with everything. And I know that sometimes we don't understand what God does. We don't understand how things work out. And we've prayed so hard, and everybody's prayed, and it didn't go the way we wanted it to. And so, you know, we get upset. But I know, and you know, God has a plan. And God has a calendar. And God's calendar has some events on there that cannot be changed. How many of you keep a calendar? How many of you have to change things on your calendar from time to time? Well, on my calendar, like, I have a list of things I need to do today. And then tonight, when all is done, I will move some of that stuff to tomorrow because it didn't get done today. And some of that stuff I won't just move to tomorrow. I'll say, well, I won't be able to do it tomorrow, so I'll move it to the next day or sometime later in the week or later in the month because it won't get done. And so with God, there are some things that move around like that. But there are some things on God's calendar that are immovable. Would you agree with that? So there are some things that no matter what happens, no matter if it seems like we're ready or not, it's going to be time. The rapture is one of those things. It is, God, Jesus said, no man knoweth the day nor the hour, but my Father knoweth. And we can't change it. God's got that set. But there are things that God leaves up to us, leaves up to, I don't say to chance, but He leaves it up to us to work out and work through and all those things. And so God chose a king. How many of you believe that in God's wisdom and providence that God knew that the next king would not be Jonathan, but David? And how do we see that? Well, because God had chosen a lineage that we see already started back here that has nothing to do with Saul. Right? So God was working some things out down through here, and Saul was a pioneer. You may say he's a placeholder, but he took this role as king, and of course he had sons. In fact, if we read this morning, we always talk about Saul being the king, and who's the next king after Saul? David. But how many of you studied this lesson and you said, well, actually, there was somebody else that was king. Ishbosheth was made king over 11 tribes. Now, David was king of Judah. And so that went from Saul to David, no doubt. Jerusalem. But the 11 tribes had another king appointed, and that was the surviving son, Ishbosheth. And that didn't last. And we see that David had the same sense for Ishbosheth that he had for Saul. So Saul, let's go to chapter 31, 1 Samuel, since your Bible's open there, verse 1. The Philistines fought against Israel. The men of Israel fled from before the Philistines and fell down slain in Mount Gilboa. The Philistines followed hard upon Saul and his sons, and the Philistines slew Jonathan and Abinadab and Malchishua, Saul's sons. Verse 3, the battle went sore against Saul. The archers hit him. He was sore wounded of the archers. Then said Saul to his armor bearer, draw thy sword, thrust me through therewith, lest these uncircumcised come and thrust me through and abuse me. But his armor bearer would not, for he was sore afraid. Again, this is a direct order from the king. So he's got to balance this. Do I take the directive of the king, or do I honor the king? He's God's anointed. There's this theme that rolls through. Therefore, Saul took a sword and fell upon it. When his armor bearer saw that Saul was dead, he fell likewise upon his sword and died with him. Verse 6, so Saul died, his three sons, his armor bearer, all his men that same day together. And when the men of Israel that were on the other side of the valley and they that were on the other side of Jordan saw the men of Israel fled and that Saul and his sons were dead, they forsook the cities and fled, and the Philistines came and dwelt in them. So it's lost, right? This king, why did they want a king? That he may go and fight for us, right? We want a king, a military king, a strong king, a warrior king, who will go out and fight for us. How did that work out? Didn't work out, did it? Samuel said, look, if you get a king, he's going to tax you. If you get a king, he's going to make rules. Won't you just trust God? Right? We got 10 commandments. Why don't we just follow them and trust God? We still can't do that, can we? It's still not that simple. We still have to have more laws and more rules. But now Saul is dead, and the heir, Jonathan, is dead, and everybody runs away. And everything that they've worked for and everything that they've built and all of the security that they thought they would have in a king has proven false. And isn't that the same thing that happens with us today? We choose leaders and representatives, and we think, well, this guy, he was going to fix everything. And they make promises, don't they? And most of them get in there and forget the promises they made. And they forget their promises, and they go back on their promises, and we say, well, this one's going to solve everything. Let's establish this. We got to trust God. I mean, I know how our government works, and we elect a president, and we elect representatives, but, you know, somebody's going to fill that role. We better pick the best we got, best option. And we see what happens when we don't. And when did God quit appointing rulers? Well, there are those who will say that the Bible says that whoever holds that role is appointed by God because it's part of his plan. There's one verse in the Bible that God said, you have chosen kings that I have not chosen. If we'll wait on God, he will appoint a king. Something that was brought up, I think, last Sunday night. Had 12 apostles, right? Judas Iscariot hung himself and died. He had 11 apostles. So what did the apostles do? They voted, they elected another one. They elected Matthias to be the 12th apostle. Did God have a plan? Who was the 12th apostle going to be? Paul. You know how do we know that? Because Jesus met Paul on the road to Damascus and called him into ministry and made him an apostle. Paul was the 12th apostle. But the church went ahead of God and they voted in their own 12th apostle. So has God stopped electing kings? No, if we'll wait on him, he'll show us who to choose. He will appoint them. He will anoint them. But if we go ahead of him, and unfortunately, I mean, primarily when we're talking about anointed kings, we're talking about Israel. We're not talking about every other nation because that's the only record we have of God anointing a king. But I will say that when we go back to Babylon, that God chose kings. Cyrus is one that God chose. Why? Because he had a purpose in him. I will say that I believe that we get ahead of God sometimes. We elect the wrong people ahead of God. We didn't wait. We didn't pray. We had our own judgment, our own fouled up wisdom in choosing our leaders or representatives. I hate calling them leaders. our representatives. But the problem is that sometimes we get ahead of God. We don't make the right choice. That's it. I'll say this. It doesn't matter if God has a plan in place, and I believe we are getting so near to the rapture that God may overwhelm and overrule the choice of the people to accomplish his purpose. And that may be what we're dealing with now. And, you know, we got another year to see how it all shakes out before the next election. I believe God has taken much of what's happening off of co-pilot, autopilot, and he's taken control of it because he's reaching a certain end. What does that mean? Well, if you get a president in there right now, and this is not political, I'm just trying to, so don't get mad at anything I say. If you get a president in there now that tries to stand in the way of one world government, one world religion, digital currency, if you get a president in there now that stops all that stuff from, you know, merging of banks and merging of religions and merging of countries and merging of, you know, if you get somebody in there now that tries to stop all that, it's going to slow down the process, isn't it? So what we need, again, I'm talking prophetically, I'm not talking my choice. What we need in leadership and in representation in America is people, and I'm not asking for this, I'm just saying that we're already marching that way, is acceptance, pushing of an agenda of climate change so that we can explain all of the climate disasters that are going to occur in the tribulation. Is it hot outside? All right, we're getting closer. And solar panels are not helping that. They're multiplying the heat out there. Pushing the climate agenda, pushing the digital currency, getting away from cash, getting away from going toward a cashless society. Someone sent me a video last night about the chip that's going in everybody's hand or forehead. You know, you can wave your palm, you can access your job, you can access your car, you can access your bank records. How many of you hate filling out paperwork at the doctor? Well, you don't have to worry about that. They just scan your hand. They got all your medical history now. We're not there yet, right? We're not there yet. But this is going forward. We're moving that way. And so what has to happen? We have to get to a point prophetically. Not saying I desire it. We have to get to a point prophetically where we're all in this together. Have we heard that before? Are we experiencing? And by the way, I'm not. My brother's got COVID. COVID is real. There is a real respiratory illness out there, and people are getting it. I'm not saying it's not true, but I'm saying it's part of the process to get us to a point where China and America and Russia and Europe and everybody's all in one basket, and we're all working together because we all got to solve this problem, whether it's climate change, whether it's a disease, a plague, as the Bible calls it, we're working toward that end. So the question was, when did God stop choosing kings? God will choose a king if we'll wait for him. But when we get ahead of him and we choose our own person, God said, look, you chose the guy, deal with it. We need God's man, right? But again, we got to get to this point where, how many of you used cash this week? Anybody use cash? All right. What would happen if you weren't able to use that? I could tell you what we do. Most, maybe not. But we have to have, how many of you use checks? Somebody say, well, you know, I don't want to use digital money because I don't want to get away from cash. Well, if you use checks, that's not cash. Right? We do digital transfers. Here's what I'm telling you, and I know you don't need a lesson on this. We're moving that way. And you won't be able to stop it. God has a date on his calendar when the trumpet's going to sound, the clouds are going to part, Jesus is going to call the Christians out of here. And again, I know I say this every week, that's all this alien talk now. There's really aliens, they say, and they're exposing all these aliens and UFOs. What's going to be the explanation when all the Christians are gone? Aliens. It's all the propagandas working together. And you say, well, I'm a Christian. I don't believe all that stuff. You're not going to be here. It doesn't matter what you believe. The media propaganda is so strong that it's all playing into the calendar. So, well, you can choose to go or not go. But that's the case. So we are marching that way. And everybody comes to me, all the Christians that come to me say, how can the world not see this? How can the world not understand, you know, when we talked about a chip in your hand or a chip in your forehead, even 25 years ago, people thought we were insane. You want to know what? When you talk about it today and it's already out there, you know what they think? They think we're still insane. Because they say, well, that's not what that is. Really? If you look up the companies that are producing it and the companies that are using it, they don't even try to hide it anymore. In their names, the name of the company tells you that it's satanic. We're marching that way. Anyway, we're going. So if you're not saved, now's the time. And if it... Well, and we're like Goshen, aren't we? We're just hoping that God will spare us from what's going on. And we've got to take a stand. We've got to stand. But the biggest stand we've got to take is we've got to tell people about Jesus. If they don't know Jesus, they're going to get left behind in this mess. You see, I'm not going to take the chip. You're not going to take the chip because we'll all be in heaven. But don't you know, and I was saying this before the COVID stuff, before it became medically necessary to have a passport that says, I got the vaccine. I was saying, you know, aren't you going to get the chip? Well, aren't you going to get the chip for your mom? What if she gets lost? Aren't you going to get a chip in your child? You got one in your dog, right? So if your dog gets lost, we just wave a wand over it, and the dog, you know, we wave it, and it says, well, this dog belongs to Henry Mosley. And they say, oh, call Henry Mosley. It's got his phone number in there. And they take the dog to your house. Well, you care more about your dog than you do about your kids. Your kids need the chip, right? How are they doing that? They're pushing the vaccine. Well, you love your children, don't you? Guys, it's propaganda. Right? Well, and again, I don't want to get political because I know people have very strong feelings on this. But the point is, it's propaganda and it's being used to push an agenda. And we're headed that direction. I don't understand how the world doesn't see this. We're marching that way. Yeah, the delusion. Just in a strong delusion. All right. Where was Saul in all this? He's dead. So Saul dies, and so then they take his body. Here's what happens. So the Philistines take his body, and they find his body at Mount Gilboa and all of the people that are with him. They strip off his armor and everything, and they take him, verse 10, put his armor in the house of Ashtaroth, and they fasten his body to the wall at Bethshan. Bethshan is a place you can go and look at even today, and it's quite a structure. But there is a place where they hung Saul's body. Why do they do that? It's a trophy. It's a trophy. That's right. We got him. And so, you know, while we're already talking about prophecy, when the two witnesses, who are the two witnesses? Moses and Elijah. Some would argue it's Elijah and Enoch. Some would argue it's two other people. But anyway, those two witnesses in the tribulation period are going to be killed in the streets of Jerusalem. And there's going to be a camera on them. And all the world will be able to see them, and they're going to lay dead in the streets, and there's going to be quite a celebration. Why? Because those two witnesses in the tribulation in Israel are preaching the gospel, and look at the political environment that they are in. The Antichrist has risen to offer peace to the world. There's peace between Syria and Saudi Arabia and Israel. I'm not talking about now. I'm talking about in the future. And so this Antichrist has stepped forward. He said, we're all in this together. Everybody needs to get the chip. Everybody needs to follow, you know, get along together. We're going to let Israel, the Jews, build a temple behind the mosque, and we're not, or the shrine, it's not a mosque, behind the shrine there on the mount, the temple mount, Mount Moriah. I knew somebody knew what it was. Behind the temple mount, so we're going to have the Jewish temple and the shrine and the mosque and the Christian, and all those who call themselves Christians that are still here in the tribulation will be able to go up there and see it all, and everybody's going to get along, sing kumbaya, all right? Because the Antichrist got it all worked out. That's what's going to happen. And there's those two missionaries from heaven dead in the streets. And we told y'all stop preaching that hate about Jesus loving everybody. That hate, right? That hate that says that the Jews killed Jesus. Well, I mean, they did. The Romans did, but the Jews wanted it. And so they're going to kill them. Everybody's going to see them laying in the streets for 3 days. It's going to be a celebration. And then what happens 3 days later? They're going to wake up and come up and continue to win souls. 144,000 Jews will be saved. Those 144,000 will continue to spread the gospel, and people will get saved in the tribulation period. It's coming. It's real. But they're going to be able to see those two dead bodies laying in the street and celebrate their death, just like these Philistines celebrated the death of Saul. Just like some celebrated the death of John the Baptist and the death of Jesus. And we're marching, you know, history just keeps repeating itself. These bad acts just keep repeating themselves until finally it's going to strike midnight and it's going to be done. But the people of Jabesh Gilead, verse 11, the inhabitants of Jabesh Gilead heard of that which the Philistines had done to Saul. By the way, that's against the rules now of war, the protocols. You're not allowed to drag bodies through the streets and parade around dead soldiers. But they're going to, you know, they did it here and they're going to do it again. All the valiant men arose and went all night, and they took the body of Saul, the bodies of his sons, from the wall at Bethshan. And they came to Jabesh and they burned them there. They cremated them, took their bones and buried them under a tree at Jabesh. And they fasted 7 days. Now that act of rescuing the remains of those men, Saul and his sons, in chapter 2 of 2 Samuel, verse 5, David sent messengers to the men of Jabesh Gilead and said to them, blessed be ye of the Lord, that ye have showed his kindness unto your Lord, even to Saul, and have buried him. Now the Lord show kindness and truth unto you, and I also will requite you this kindness because ye have done this thing. Now, what we overlooked in verse number 4, David is anointed king over Judah. Verse 7, therefore now let your hands be strengthened, be valiant, for your master Saul is dead, and also the house of Judah have anointed me king over them. But Abner, son of Ner, captain of Saul's host, took Ishbosheth, the son of Saul, and made him king. And brought him over to Mahanaim and made him king over Gilead. And the Asherites, Jezreel, Ephraim, Benjamin, and all over all Israel. Ishbosheth, Saul's son, was 41 years old when he began to reign over Israel and reigned 2 years. But the house of Judah followed David. So what happens in these 2 years? Nothing much. Right? Saul's dead. Ishbosheth is king over the 11 tribes. David is king over one. And everybody gets along fine. But then, in chapter 2, verse 12, Abner, the son of Ner, and the servants of Ishbosheth, the son of Saul, went out to Mahanaim, to Gibeon. And Joab, son of Zeruiah, servants of David, went out and met together by the pool of Gibeon. They sat down, one on one side, the other on the other side. And Abner said to Joab, "Let the young men now arise and play before us." So we have two captains with their armies, and he says, "Let's have them fight it. Fight it out." He says, "Play." But you understand, and the following verse explains it. Verse 15, "There arose and went over by number 12 of Benjamin, which pertained to Ishbosheth, son of Saul, and 12 of the servants of David. And they caught every one his fellow by the head and thrust his sword in his fellow's side. So they fell down together." It's called the Field of Swords. Helkath HaZorim. So here these 24 men killed each other. For what? To what end? There was no point to it, no value in it. But they were not. Here's the thing. They're brothers. This is a civil war. These are Jews fighting Jews, killing each other. And for what? To please the captain? To satisfy some sick ideas of their captain? So what happens after that? Well, after that, they killed Ishbosheth. So there's battle, war, you know. So it went from being relatively quiet, where two captains on opposing sides can sit together and their men can sit together and nothing happens, to then turn it into a bloodbath again. In chapter 4, Saul's son heard that Abner was dead. Joab killed Abner. And so they pursued. It also tells us in chapter 4, verse 4, about Mephibosheth and how he was crippled at the age of 5 years old and never did gain his strength again to walk. Verse 5, the sons of Ramon, the sons of and the Berethite, Rechab, Banah, went and came about the heat of the day to the house of Ishbosheth, who lay on a bed at noon. They came thither into the midst of the house as though they would have fetched wheat, and they smote him under the fifth rib. Rechab, Banah, his brother, escaped. So they fled. Verse 8, they brought the head of Ishbosheth to David, to Hebron, and said to the king, "Behold, the head of Ishbosheth, son of Saul, thine enemy, which sought thy life, and the Lord hath avenged my lord the king this day of Saul and of his seed." What was their explanation? "We did it for God. We did it for you. We did it for God." And David answered, recall verse 9, and his brother, the sons of Ramon the Berethite, and said to them, "As the Lord liveth, who hath redeemed my soul out of all adversity? When one told me, saying, 'Behold, Saul is dead,' thinking to have brought good tidings, I took hold of him and slew him in Ziklag, who thought that I would have given him a reward for his tidings. How much more when wicked men have slain a righteous person in his own house upon his bed? Shall I not therefore now require his blood of your hand and take you away from the earth?" And David commanded his young men that they slew him. They slew them, cut off their hands and feet, and hung them over the pool of Hebron. And they buried the head of Ishbosheth in the sepulcher of Abner in Hebron. So this lesson, it's an awful picture, it's an awful image, as we look at the events that happened here. But what's happening is there's going to be a transition. So we've gone from Saul, who was chosen as king, who brought peace to Israel, who led Israel, but then he betrayed God, he denied God, and his anointing was taken away. He focused on killing David. David did him no harm. But then he confirmed, "I know David will be king." Samuel confirmed David will be king. Jonathan said David will be king. Everybody says David will be king. Saul finally gives up, and the next time he goes to battle, he's killed. His son takes over 11 tribes. David has one, still no problem. But there are people who are never satisfied with peace. You notice that? They're just not satisfied with peace. Here's Joab and Abner sitting by the pool. They're soldiers sitting there, and there's peace. They're not satisfied. It starts over, and eventually Joab kills Abner. And then after that, they kill Ishbosheth. Just this craving they have that they think is going to satisfy something, and their explanation for killing Ishbosheth is, well, it's for the Lord. It wasn't for the Lord. It wasn't for God. And David wasn't satisfied. Again, they thought it would please him because it pleased them. The reality is that a lot of times we try to make other people happy by doing what makes us happy. So the question is, was it really about making them happy, or was it just about making us happy? And anyway, the Bible does say that Saul was killed for one reason, because he disobeyed God. His kingship ended. His reign ended because he disobeyed God. Because he wasn't patient. Because, again, he did what made him happy. And he figured it would make God. What did he do? Well, number one, he didn't destroy everything. He brought back the sheep. And God said, no, don't bring back the sheep. He said, well, they were good sheep. And I didn't bring them. The people brought them. He started to realize, and he said it out loud, how it wasn't really honest. As he began to tell his story, he had to change his story because he realized he had done wrong. But it was too late. Because God needs a leader. God chose a leader who could be an example to his people. And if Saul is going to disobey God, what are the people going to do? If Saul is going to bend the rules and blame other people, what are the people going to do? And that's not the kind of leader God needed or wanted. And so David is already anointed king. He'll be anointed king again and again. Questions, comments, criticisms, concerns? I know it's not a very encouraging chapter, is it? But it brings it to a close. It brings us to a close not only of Saul being king, but also of Ishbosheth being king. And so now we come to David being king of all Israel. And it won't be satisfied. There'll still be conflict. Right? We've got 12 tribes. They're all Jews, but they're 12 different tribes. And each tribe has its own way of thinking. Just like here. Right? You think about the different parts of our country, not just states, but regions. And things just don't fit here that fit there. It might work for y'all, but don't bring it here and try to do it with us. But that's what we find continuing to happen throughout the world. It's not a one-size-fits-all world. All right, let's take a break.